Blog Talk Radio.
This pot smells delicious, and it's the base for our ultimate beef stew. Now we're talking about beef stew.
I'm in the building today with my special guest in the building, my man Corey. My man Corey, Big Sosa.
Yeah. What's good? It's your man DJ Big Stu. We had a little technical difficulty. I'm in the building. What's going on, y'all? Y'all know how it goes down. I told y'all today we're going to have a very, very special guest. He's in the building today. I want to welcome Mr. Rick Baker to the show. How you doing, sir?
I'm doing great. How are you doing? Now, is it Beef Stew DJ? I mean, what do I call you, dude?
Well, I'm DJ Big Stew, but it's Beef Stew okay. Radio.
All right, DJ. Yeah. Hey, DJ, thanks for letting me be on your show. I'm glad to be here. Doing great. Thank you.
All right. You know, first of all, before we even get into anything, I want you to give people a little background on yourself.
Well, you know, I'm just a normal guy. I've written, this is my third book, and got involved in this case about 3 years ago. Lived out in Fallbrook in Southern California, where the family lived when they disappeared in early 2010. You know, it's an addicting case. It's a true mystery, and so I got addicted to it, and I've been on it ever since, and the book comes out next week. So looking forward to it, and other than that, you know, I was a pastor a long time ago, DJ, and always enjoyed writing. Never had attempted any writing, but I enjoyed it. And so I wrote, my first book came out 3 years ago, my second one a couple of years ago. My second book, Tears of a Father, is specifically for fathers who are going through family court, either through a divorce or a failed relationship, trying to get them to stay engaged with their kids, you know, because we have a lot of dads today who are just can't win in family court and they're walking away and our kids are being victimized. So that was my second book. And now this book, No Goodbyes on the McStay Family, it comes out. Its official release is February 4th.
Mm. Now, what made you compelled to tell this story? Because this is a real deep story for those of y'all that don't know that out there. What made you compelled to tell it?
Well, I was finishing up my second book at a little coffee shop in Fallbrook. Fallbrook is a little town in Southern California surrounded by avocado orchards. It used to be the avocado capital of the world. Not so much now, Mexico is, but just a quaint little town. I found this little coffee shop downtown Main Street. When I write, I have to have a buzz. I have to have people. I have to hear voices. So I'm sitting in the back of this coffee shop in March of 2010. Editing the final manuscript for my book, The Tears of a Father. And a couple next to me, the table over, started talking about this family that had vanished a month earlier from that town just down the street. And then pretty soon the entire coffee shop were talking about this family called the McStays. You know, and what happened to them? They disappeared. And so that kind of, I guess, got me infatuated with it. Obviously, it was all over the news in Southern California and certainly in Fallbrook, you know, because Fallbrook's a small town. This was a big deal. So the local media covered it for a long time. I had a talk radio show on a San Diego radio station, AM radio station, and I interviewed Joseph McStay as the father and husband who disappeared. I interviewed his brother, Mike McStay, on my show. And I'd asked him a number of questions that just didn't add up right. You know, his answers weren't right. And that, I suppose, is when I became addicted to this, because I wanted to know what he wasn't telling me, you know, what he wasn't telling the world. And from
like,
that point on,
what are some of the things that, not to cut you off, but what are some of the things that he might have said to you that really triggered off that, you know, for you just meeting him and just to say that this doesn't sound right? What's some things that he said to you?
Well, DJ, now it's in the book, dude. You know, so I don't want to give
away
the book.
Yeah, I know. I read it.
I
want you to tell a little bit to the listeners.
Well,
there
were a number of stories that he told about the way that he that he realized that his brother was missing, the way that he entered his brother's house, how long it took him to realize that his brother was missing. I knew that some of these statements weren't correct because I had talked to some other people. The morning, I interviewed him at 1 o'clock on my talk show, and that morning I had been on the phone with some others who had different information, and they specifically told me what questions to ask Mike, and they told me what his answer would be. So I asked him those questions, and sure enough, you know, they were right. It just wasn't honest. His answers were not correct, and I wanted to know why. Now, I began to realize why once I, you know, got into the case. But up to that point, you know, I thought he was just like you and me. If our brother went missing, you know, the first thing I would do, dude, is I'd try to get a reward going. Mm-hmm. I'd pass out flyers. Yep. I would offer to help law enforcement. I would do whatever I could do, right, to try to help find my brother and his family, as you would. And that's who I thought Mike was at that point. Come to realize, certainly in the months and years later, that's not the case. But at that point, there were just some statements that he made that just didn't add up. And so I wanted to know more. So that's when I started investigating. At that point, you know, there were a number of people, excuse me, who listened to the show that day. It was it went around the country, I think, on some of the Facebook pages, the McStay Facebook pages. They had announced on those pages that Mike was going to be on my show. So there were listeners from all over the world listening. I got a bunch of phone calls after the show that day, and they all told me to talk to Patrick McStay, Mike's dad, and Joseph, the husband who's missing, his dad. So I ended up calling Patrick the next day and instantly began to see a different side to what Mike was saying that just didn't add up. That's what kind of got me into this whole extended family toxicity, I call it. They're just, you know, between Mr. McStay, the father, and Mike McStay, and the people who follow them, they've gone to great lengths to try to keep my publisher from releasing this book. And I don't know why. There's some reason why they don't want the family found.
Now, what I see, though, is, you know, I found strange that this book is almost seem like, all right, you know, I see that there's a lot of high suspicion on the brother, but the wife, she has some strange things in the past too. So it's like you don't really know who, because you know you guys really don't know who, because they had a mirror up on who they was to opposed to what they was in real life. Am I correct?
Yeah, it's, you know, in real life, this just appears to be a family of four, two great kids, husband and wife, loved each other. You know, you look at the YouTube channel that Joseph McStay has. I have it on my blog. You watch those videos where, you know, he's a father who loves his kids, and there's Summer, the mom out there on her bike with the kids, smiling and happy. That's what it appears on the surface. But when you get into the emails of, especially of Summer McStay, and, you know, I went through hundreds of her emails, her personal emails. You begin to see a different person. On the surface, she would say one thing. Publicly, she would make one statement or show one persona. But privately, when she was sending these emails, she was anything but that. She was, I believe, a very dangerous person. I can only describe her as evil.
So now, you and the father, y'all was working together on the story, but then it seemed like that, towards some time in the story, you and him didn't see eye to eye. What happened then?
Well, I guess the biggest challenge we had, DJ, was that, you know, I believe that Patrick McStay, Joseph's father, loves his son and family very much. And I believe that he wants a resolution. He wants this case solved. He wants to know where they're at, dead or alive. And I've always believed that. What Mr. McStay did, though, when I proposed to him writing a book about this, because there was no book on it, the media had kind of died down. Maybe on the anniversary, every time February 4 rolls around, then some of the local media would run a story that this is the first or second or third anniversary coming up. But other than that, there wasn't a lot of publicity. So I said, let's write a book. All the proceeds can go to a foundation. I'll launch the McStay Foundation. And all the money that's from the book profits will go into that foundation. that money will be used specifically to find your family. Once your family is found, if there's still money left, that money then is given to other great search organizations like Texas EchoSearch. So he agreed to that. We both agreed. He would then furnish me with the information that he had, which at that point was some documentation from both Joseph and Summer's emails. And he'd talked to a few of their friends, but not extensively, because he just hadn't gone to California. He'd tried to do everything from Houston. I was there, so I began interviewing everybody. I began spending time on the road, you know, running some of these people down, especially some of the neighbors who had already moved. But I began to realize quickly into this with Mr. McStay that he was not giving me all the information. The emails that I would ask, he said, this is all I've got. They weren't all he had. He was purposely withholding emails, especially emails, personal emails that Summer had written that he had. He had some. He didn't have all that I've got, but he did have some that were very damaging to Summer. And he withheld those. And I found out kind of a roundabout way that he was withholding information from me because he wanted me to write a book that painted his family as, you know, Mayberry RFD. And, you know, they weren't Mayberry at all. So once I realized that he was not, you know, being square with me and he wasn't interested in an objective book, we parted ways.
Now, do you feel that Joseph, like, at the last end of his days reading your book, I feel like he was probably really in a state of real sadness because, you know, between his things with his brother and his father and between the things with his wife, it just seemed like he had a lot on his shoulders. Do you think anything of the disappearance could be anything due to him, his fault?
Well, at first I thought that, you know, because I didn't have all the information, because it had been skewed, I thought that he had just finally punched out. Like, how many of us, DJ, at one time or another, haven't thought, hey, let's just bail, you know, and just get out of here. I thought maybe the family just bailed, and because he did have a lot on his plate. But as I began to look at the documentation, a lot of the financial documentation, having interviewed some of his business associates and those who knew and do know the business associates, it became very obvious that, you know, Joseph wouldn't have done that. He certainly wouldn't have left all the money in the bank that he did. If he were going to leave, he would have taken the 100 grand plus somehow. He would have taken that. Summer was not on any of the accounts, Joseph's business accounts. She wanted to be on them, but he never put her on them. So she had no access to the money. And I think toward the end, you know, Joseph was having problems with Summer. A couple of Joseph's friends told me that, you know, while Joseph was just, you know, a stand-up guy who wasn't going to complain about anything, and his personal life was, he liked to keep it personal. Some of his closer friends, soccer buddy and some others, knew that he was having some serious issues with Summer.
So now the police, why they never, because now I heard the brother had access to all the emails. You know, when I read up, the brother had access to the emails and the bank accounts and stuff. Why didn't the police never search him? Like, why didn't they never just, that wouldn't that be something that would make them go directly to him? He would be an instant suspect, I would think.
Well, and, you know, and maybe, but I give law enforcement a pass, somewhat of a pass, because I think that in the beginning stages, they, you know, they believed that this was a voluntary missing. They believed, like, you know, I've just talked, that Joseph and Summer grabbed the kids and bailed, and that was the end of that, and there's no law against leaving, you know. And so once it all began to come out that that's probably not what happened, there were some things done that probably would have been done differently by law enforcement. Number one, they would have instantly taken the computer in the house. You know, Joseph made it a point to email to himself all of his passwords. And ladies and gentlemen, don't do that, by the way. But he made a point to email all of his passwords. And the computer was there. And while, you know, Mike McStay says that he didn't get there until the 16th or the 17th or the 13th or whatever date he comes up with, depending on when you talk to him, I believe he was there much sooner than that, if not the night of the 4th, February 4th, then certainly the weekend, 6, 7, 8 of February. Regardless of when he was there, all he had to do was sit down on the computer. Anybody could just sit down on Joe's computer, Joseph's computer, and they had all of his passwords. Because money started getting transferred out of his business accounts on February the 6th is when it was in, the first one was initiated. It only been gone 2 days, and yet already they're starting to transfer money, and it became just a flood of funds being sucked out of his accounts in the next month.
So now I want to ask you, now, did you ever get any like threats or anything from anybody while you was doing this? Did you ever feel your life was in danger?
Well, you know, I had a few threats from some of these people, but they weren't, I don't think they were, you know, death threats. That, although I did have one law enforcement individual tell me that, you know, if Joseph is dead, if Summer did have him killed, and because I don't believe Summer could have pulled this off by herself, there had to be somebody else with her. But if that's the case, and obviously there's a murder involved and they may not appreciate me digging around, that would be a little bit different. But I think the threats that I've received were mainly just from people who don't want what I've exposed in the book to come to ever see the light of day. You know, Mike has never threatened me. But, you know, some of what's in the book, it's not kind. And I hate that. But all that I've done in the book, you've read it, is I've presented, you know, emails, and I've presented financial documentation, and there's not a lot of my opinion in there.
So how's the cooperation with the police? Like, did they ever feel like you was getting in the way of their investigation, or were they helpful to you?
They haven't been helpful. They haven't been hurtful. Detective Troy DeGaulle is the detective on the case. I think he's doing, you know, a great job. There have been all kinds of budget cuts in law enforcement all over the country. They certainly are going to spend, you know, their limited man hours and officers and detectives on cases that they're needed. Right now, you know, I do believe that they think this is a murder investigation, but there's nothing they can do, you know, unless they find a body or somebody slips up. So they're probably biding their time and waiting to see, you know, what plays out. They haven't been, you know, they haven't helped me. They've just kind of been there. I know that they're checking my blog out often. You know, I can see where they're coming from. But they're not going to talk to anyone, especially if it's a murder investigation.
Now, when you go around, do you, like, friends now? How do friends feel? Do you, like, the book is coming out now. Now, do you have any support from anybody close to them on the book, or have they read the book, any of them?
No, that's a great question, DJ. Before anyone realized I was writing a book, people would talk to me, and once they, you know, heard I was writing a book, then most people, you know, shut down pretty quickly. And I, you know, I have recordings of conversations, I have emails, so I have all the documentation that I need to back up every statement that is in the book that I claim one of the friends or extended family members made. You know, so I have all of that. But there were some of the friends, you know, that threatened to sue me, and that's okay. As I've said before, if Mike McStay wants to sue me because of what I have about him in the book, I would encourage that. Because then that gives me the opportunity for discovery in court. And in my discovery, I would demand to know where he was on February the 4th on that weekend. I would demand to see all of his financial records from February the 4th through the end of May 2010. I would demand that he take a lie detector test. I mean, I would have a lot of demands if he wants to sue me. That would be a good thing, maybe, DJ, because then maybe we can get to the bottom of what really happened.
And I see that they kind of, you know, claimed that two men walked up to him one night after a soccer game. I mean, did you find that was true? Like, they try to make it look like he might have had some suspicious things in his own past. And, you know, his wife had Colombian descent, you know, ancestry, like you said. Do you think that was just part of the setup? Or do you think, is you more inclined to believe, is Summer, and with you doing all the investigation and you being on the case, does it look like it's more towards Summer or it's more towards the brother? And was anything they said about him, like when they were talking about he was talking to some shady-looking guys, having a crazy, not an honest conversation, basically?
Well, and I don't think, you know, I think it goes towards Summer and not Mike if there's any crime committed, you know, as far as murder. Mike would just maybe just be greedy, trying to get as much money from Joe as he could. But, you know, and the example you talked about, the two men after the soccer game, I was not able to confirm that. In fact, I talked to one of Joseph's very good friends that was there two nights a week with Joseph playing soccer, and this is all in the book. And he refuted all of that. So that's something that came – I don't know where that originated. I think it might have originated from Mike, but I'm not sure. And then Mike told law enforcement, law enforcement may have mentioned it. But there were none of Joseph's soccer buddies that ever saw that take place. You know, Mike also said in the beginning stages that he thought the kids had been kidnapped for the sex trade business. So he was all over the map, all over the grid when it came to throwing his theories out there. And it sounded great, didn't it? With Summer from Columbia, and you know, the Colombians did this, and she.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't think so. I don't think so, dude.
Now, so what about, like, himself? Like, they both had decent jobs. They made a lot of money. I mean, they made a pretty good living, these people do. Was they going through some financial troubles at any time during this period?
No, not in 2009 and up the beginning of 2010. You know, Joseph's fountain business was doing very well, and he was actually making a lot of money. Certainly in the fall of 2009. Summer, on the other hand, you know, just a shady person, and she wasn't making a lot of money. It's hard to determine. She got involved in that loan mod business. You know, I devote a chapter in the book to the loan modification business, and I talked to a lot of her former workers, co-workers in that loan mod business that had since moved on, you know, obviously. But, you know, we found out that she had a bank account in North Carolina, and the money that she was making from the loan mod business, I'm not sure how much it was. You know, I detail this in the book, was probably being deposited into the North Carolina account. So she didn't – I don't know how much money she had. Everybody wants to throw around $100,000. So he had this and she had $100,000. I can't prove any of that. She had some substantial funds in the account in North Carolina, as I get into in the book. But Joseph was the one. He was the family man. He was the great father. He was trying to make his marriage work. And you can see this when you read these emails in the book, the things that she would say to him that, you know, were just, you know, hard for me to believe. And he was just a good guy, a stand-up guy, integrity. In all the interviews that I had, all the conversations that I had, I never heard one negative comment about Joseph. Other than he might have been too trusting, you know, and maybe that's negative. It might have been if it got him killed.
Yeah. Now, when I was reading it, another person that came to my mind was MacGyver, the friend. When I first got into the book, it kind of reminded me, like, he could have been somebody, because she was always telling him stuff, you know, speaking to him, even though he was both of their friends. But do you feel... like his word is trustworthy when you've spoken to him and you sat down with him? Do you feel like he was honestly a friend, or could there be anything, you know, shady about him too?
You know, and DJ, that's a great question. The word trustworthy in all of this. I don't think that I completely trust anybody that I spoke with, and I talked with over 20 from business associates, friends, extended family members. I don't believe that. Now, by saying that, I don't think they're trustworthy. I think that MacGyver told me the truth. I don't think he lied to me about anything. I have extensive conversations with MacGyver in the book that are pretty mind-boggling with what happened, you know, after February 4th, according to MacGyver. I don't think he lied to me about any of that. Now, did he tell me everything that he knows? I don't think so. Did anybody, you know, come out clean with everything they know? I don't think so. I don't know that I was outright lied to, other than in the beginning stages of my investigation. But toward the end, there were just some things maybe people didn't want to tell me. And it might not have anything to do with the crime. It might just be trying to protect a friend.
And, you know, to me, kind of, it looked like it was almost going to be like, because, you know, she was confiding in him a lot. And I was ever wondering, was he ever looked under investigation? Was he ever investigated? Whether he ever looked at as a suspect or anything like that?
Yeah, he was. And I talk about that in the book, you know, what the sheriff's department did, who they interviewed and who they thought might be culpable in this in the beginning stages. And I think that changed for them a couple of weeks down the road when they began to look at the financial records. I do not have all of the bank statements, you know, from Wells Fargo and Chase and Bank of America. They do. And you know, I do have a lot of the PayPal. As you've looked at the book, you can see all the money that is being transferred. It's all coming out of Joseph's accounts. So law enforcement has all of that, and they had their theories, and a couple of the business associates and friends I talked to, you know, detailed for me the conversations that they'd had with law enforcement, and as you see, I put that in the book, too.
Wow. Now I'm just wondering, like, the case is still open. Do you feel like is anybody taking it serious? Have you ever met a police officer that you felt that taking it serious like you do? Like, it seems to be, honestly, like you might be one of the only people taking this thing to be that serious and really trying to find out what's happened to the family.
Well, and you know, and DJ, some have said that I've just lost my mind to do this because I'm not getting paid anything for this. All of the book funds, all the profits from the book are going to Texas Equisearch out of Houston, a great search organization. I'm not keeping any money. I've spent thousands of dollars of my own money to this point traveling, investigating some sightings, interviewing people and that sort of thing, because it's just kind of addicting, you know, and I want to know what happened to the family. And if Summer did something or had something done to Joseph, you know, I want to see her fry. I want to see her go to jail. I want to see her convicted. But more than anything else, I want to know what happened to the kids, you know, to Gianni and Joseph, little Joey, Joseph Mateo. I want to know that they're okay. Now, as far as serious, I know that Detective DeGaulle is serious about it. But at the same time, there's only so much he can do until a body is found or somebody slips up. Now, at the end of November, in a town, Temecula, you know, when you look at Fallbrook, if you're visualizing as you're listening to the radio listeners, I-15 in Southern California runs north to south, so, you know, south San Diego, north up toward Barstow. And Fallbrook is off of I-15. The next town north is a town called Temecula. And there, you know, it's kind of the Napa Valley of the South. A lot of vineyards, a beautiful place. Well, there was a body found at the end of November just east of Temecula, out in kind of desert area. And, you know, I talked to the Riverside County coroner, and she told me, you know, she talked about the body. I actually gave her, because I was given by my investigators, the dental records, Joseph's dental records, because I thought maybe that's Joseph. And I found out from her that, you know, it wasn't him, because this person had no teeth, was wearing dentures. This person had breaks in bones that Joseph didn't, was also taller, hadn't been buried 3 years. But what was interesting in all of that was one of the first phone calls that the coroner got, she told me, was from a detective at the San Diego Sheriff's Department asking if that was Joseph McStay. So they're thinking that. They're thinking that.
So, I mean, this thing has, it seems so much bigger, and it's like, do you think she has a lot of aliases and she has a lot of shady stuff in the past, right? Am I correct?
Yes, yeah, you've seen the aliases in that chapter as you've read the book, and just, you know, Summer is the kind of person who didn't keep a job for very long, couldn't keep her attention span focused in one area for very long. I think at the same time she was kind of a conniver, and or is kind of a conniver, and may have been setting this up. But again, as I said earlier, I don't think she was capable of doing this on her own. I think she had to have help.
Now,
but we don't know. You know, it's a true
Mike?
Mystery. That's
could it be Mike?
So addicting.
Because it seemed like her and Mike didn't get along. And they didn't. But could it be Mike? Like in the full of a thing, could you see that happening from doing the interview?
Well,
could you see?
You know, I personally my personal opinion, no. I don't think Mike is involved. And I've gone back and forth. I don't think Mike is involved with harming his brother in any way, physically, as far as harming his brother by by getting into his brother's finances, that's a different story. But I don't, and you're right about Mike and Summer not getting along. Summer was extremely angry. I talk a lot about this in the book, because Mike was borrowing money from his brother, and that was starting to get to Summer. And I detail, you know, in the book where that went. But they did not get along. I think it's safe to say Mike really did not like Summer.
Mm-hmm. And the way she talked to him a lot of times, and sometimes in the texts or the emails that she gave him, you know, I'm kind of figuring what kept them together so long, because it seemed like she treated him so bad.
Yeah, and that, isn't that just mind-boggling, some of those emails you read in the book? I don't know. You know, Joseph is from, again, I wish I could have met Joseph, you know, but from all of his friends and business associates, those who knew him the best, he was the kind of guy who'd let you crash on his couch. If you needed to borrow some money, he'd lend you some money. He didn't like confrontation. He always looked for the best in people. He was a hard worker. He believed in capitalism. He was an entrepreneur. He was a craftsman, an artist with his design of his fountains, and he wanted to make sure that his customers were always happy. His business had an A-plus, better business rating, you know, and before he disappeared. So I can't answer that. I don't understand why he would stay with her, knowing what I know now about her, and he obviously knew more than I do. I don't understand why he stayed with her either.
Was there ever a private investigator that looked into the case? And, you know, did anybody in the family ever, the father, did he ever try, or anybody try to, and was that
there,
mother?
Yeah,
like,
there were a couple. There were a couple. Patrick McStay hired Texas Equisearch in the beginning days, right at, you know, the second week of February, as soon as this all started to break. Tim Miller, who runs Texas EchoSearch, great guy, stand-up guy. He went out to San Diego, and he toured the area, and he went down to the border where the trooper was found. And I've talked to Tim extensively as well, but I told him I would keep most of our conversations out of the book, which I have. But, you know, Tim didn't want to be involved in the case any longer after some things that he learned when he was out there talking to Mike. He was pretty much done with it. So there were, you know, he was hired to start with. He was paid a little bit, but he works only on donation and didn't go out there seeking money. But, you know, he did get some money, not enough, I don't think, but he got some. And there were a couple of other investigators that weren't ever hired, per se, but they kind of dug into it. But they bailed, too. And typically it seems like once anyone started to work with Mike McStay for any length of time, if they were professionals, they eventually walked away.
Now, we hear a lot from, you know, Joseph's family, but what about Summer's family? Was there anybody on her side or her family asking? She's missing, too. Like, you know, did her parents or brothers and sisters or even cousins even try to find out or try to contact you to tell you their side of the family, their family vision of what happened?
My wife and I actually sat down with Summer's sister and her mom for one afternoon, a long time, and then spent hours on the phone after that. But we went up to the mountains where Summer's mom lived and met with Summer's mom and her sister all afternoon. And, you know, the entire time, Summer's mom was just breaking down emotionally, so distraught that her daughter was gone and she didn't know what happened. They were very concerned. But again, they do not get along with Mike at all, or Mike's mom, Susan. And so that was a real difficult thing for them because they weren't in the loop necessarily, certainly not as much as they wanted to be. Mike became the spokesperson for this whole missing persons case immediately and kind of enjoyed, you know, the spotlight, it appeared. And they didn't get the information, the updates, as they wanted to get them, according to them, from Mike. So they were kind of out of the loop. And today, you know, I know that the sister is still actively pursuing on her own, not having much to do with Mike. And her mom is just emotionally drained, and there's just really nothing she can do. She's so distraught over her daughter, the three-year anniversary coming up February 4th.
Now, with everything that went on, and it's like, you know, I know in their little town there had to be a lot of turmoil and stuff. How did Mike continue on to go, like, to work with, like, maybe to go to work or to continue on to his life? He stayed in their town, Mike, right?
Yeah, he was in the Oceanside area, which is pretty much due east or due west of Fallbrook on the coast, you know, and that's about 15, 20 miles. And now he's moved a little bit north up to another beach town somewhere in there. I'm not sure exactly where. But, you know, he was involved, but he didn't do what you and I would have done. I mean, the first thing I would have done, DJ, is put flyers up. he didn't do that. You know, he didn't do that immediately. And so he wasn't really involved. He was a spokesperson. He enjoyed, I think, being interviewed by, you know, by some of these TV shows, Geraldo especially. And I guess I'm going to be on Geraldo next month, it looks like. And I know that Geraldo was unhappy with his interview with Mike, you know, as he told me. So Mike was just kind of the spotlight on this whole thing. And I think he enjoyed that. But he continued doing whatever it is that he does, and I don't know that he's done a lot lately. You know, he's had his Facebook page he doesn't really run anymore, and the McStay family website that is his website, you know, he runs that. He has a donation button on that site. If you look at it, McStayFamily.org, you'll see it says donate, you know, to help find the missing McStays. Don't do that. Don't donate. Don't donate on that site. I would tell all of your listeners, if they want to donate, then what I would ask them to do is send an email to Mike and ask him for an accounting of all the other money that's been donated to that site in the last 2.5 years. And that money is supposed to have gone to find his brother, right? And I have it on pretty good authority that we're talking thousands and thousands of dollars in donations. I would say if you want to donate to the McStay cause, then, you know, email Mike and ask him to provide an accounting of where all that money went. Please don't donate to that site. There's no guarantee that money will try to find the McStays.
So if you wanted, if there's anything that you wanted people to know about this case, you know, if any message that you want to get out on your behalf, what is it?
Well, you know, the reason I wrote the book was hopefully to solve the case. I didn't solve the case. Obviously, you've read it, but and a couple of the reviews said I've you know, generated more questions now than answers, and that's true. What I wanted to do with this book is try to get this case back into the public eye, because somebody knows something, and if there's a murder, then somebody knows something. They're going to slip up. My wife and I have offered a $25,000 cash reward for the family. $25,000 cash. Somebody tells me where the families are at, I walk over, I take a picture, I give them a check for $25,000. It's just that simple. I want this to be solved, and I'm not into it for any kind of gain. So what I would say is, you know, buy the book. The money goes to Texas EchoSearch. I would say read the book, study this case, stay involved, go to my blog. I'll give you the address in a moment for your listeners. And stay involved in this case, because – somebody may know something. Who, for all you know, Summer's living next door. But we wouldn't know it was Summer next door because you haven't been following the case. So that's kind of the purpose. On my blog, may I give you, your listeners, my blog?
Yeah, I would love you to give us all the information, you know, to keep up with this. You can go right ahead. Feel free.
Okay. You know, the easiest way, if they don't have a pen to write it down on the drive, the easiest way is just go to rickbakershow.com. rickbakershow.com. If you go to my talk show website, then you'll see the blog there. You can click on that. It'll take the link will take you right to my blog, and that's updated daily. If there are sightings, any new information is there. So I would ask you to hit that thing every day, put it on your bookmarks, and follow the case, because somebody knows something, and I'm hoping that it's one of your listeners. Let's get this thing solved.
Well, it's very interesting, and I really want to thank you for coming on the show. It's been very interesting, man, and your book is a great book. It just took my mind. You know, I ain't want to give everybody a thing, but definitely go out there, you know, go out there and get that book, man. You know, it's really nice.
DJ,
I want you to say, you know, once again.
You can order my blog, and it's the address for the website. Just go to rickbakershow.com. Or if you just Google McStay, Rick Baker McStay, you know, I'm all over that on a Google. But you can order the book from my blog. I'll sign it, which doesn't mean anything. I can't read my own signature, but if you want, it's signed. I'll do that. If you order from the blog, then Texas EquiSearch gets more money. But it's on Amazon.com. It's at Barnes & Noble. It's on all the online sellers and all the bookstores. They don't get as much money if you buy it from Amazon as you do from my blog. Again, RickBakerShow.com. And, DJ, thank you for allowing me to be on tonight. I appreciate it. Great show, dude. Thank you very much.
Hey, it was a great show. I thank you, man. So stay in touch with us.
All right. Have a great evening. God bless. Bye-bye.
You too, man. Wow, that's deep, y'all. That was my man, Rick Baker, in the building, telling us about the McStay family, another best-selling offer that I do on Mondays. You guys know I do a lot of best-selling offers, so y'all need to go get that book. You know, that book is something that I really think everybody need to go check it out. You know what I'm saying? It just when I read it, some of the things just threw me off. And the book is called No Goodbyes, The Mystery Disappearance of the McStay Family. It's a father, mother, two children, you know, a typical American family, one boy, one girl, it looks like. And it's written by Mr. Rick Baker, you know, rickbaker.com. He's a well-known blog and radio host, internet radio host like myself. You know, sometimes we got to interview each other, especially when we're doing things. Like a lot of brothers interviewing me about the East Side Story movie, which is good. But I'm definitely going to get a link and put the link on to the book on www.beefstewradio.com. Make sure y'all go to that beefstewradio.com. Follow me at Twitter at beefstewradio.com. It's DJ Big Stu. We in the building. I want y'all to ask me on that. Like a lot of y'all, when you know, just go tell me what y'all feel about that from what y'all heard, and you know, for some of the things that y'all heard that's being said, what do y'all think? You know what I'm saying? Do y'all think it could be the brother? Could it be the brother and the wife? Could it be she had a little boyfriend on the side with the best friend? It's what could it be? You know what I'm saying? Did she do some shiesty dealings at her business? You know, she wasn't really making money. Did she make a deal with the devil and it came back to haunt them? You know, or did the brother get greedy? And, you know, and it's deep because this is a true story. This is not a lie. This is, you know, this is not a fiction. This is not nothing. This is real life stuff that happened. And, you know, a lot of people didn't even know about it. Myself, I was very unaware of the situation until a couple of people brought it to me. And I was like, wow, this is deep, man. This is real deep. I gotta check this out a little more. And then when I did, and I contacted Homeboy, and I read the book, and it just threw me off, man. So I'll make sure y'all definitely go get that No Goodbyes, man. You know what I mean? No Goodbyes by Mr. Rick Baker. It is definitely a good book. It's definitely a good book. And the e-book is fast reading, you know? So, if you don't like to read that much, you know, go get an e-book, man. E-books, you know, reading is fundamental and reading is a necessity. But, you know, some of us don't like to read. You know, some of us be mad and we don't want to read. So, go get the e-book, son. But now, it is DJ Big Stu and it's Monday night. And I usually play some classic joints on Monday night after the interviews. So, without further ado, I'm going to do what I do for the next hour. And I just want y'all to, once again, follow me at BeefStewRadio.com. You know what I'm saying? Follow me at BeefStewRadio on Facebook. Follow me at BeefStewRadio on Twitter. Follow me at BeefStewRadio on everything. LinkedIn, TumblrUpon, Google+, everything that you could be in. Shout out to the Block Club DJs. I am a member of the Block Club DJs. We definitely doing big things. We got some events coming up. I'm going to keep y'all aware. We got some events in New York and Jersey and Chi-Town going on at the same time because we are a national organization. So we got people working in different states and we got family in different states. So I will keep y'all up on that. Make sure y'all check out my website that I am launching with the Block Club DJs, Block Club Video NYC.com, and that's featuring, well, I'll be playing a lot of videos and a lot of stuff that, you know, things that you may see on the nature of YouTube or stuff like that. Well, I'll be playing them joints, you know, funny comedies, basketball games, very exciting stuff. Anything on the web that you want to see and you think you go to other sites and see, or you have a hard time getting on a site because it got you know the website don't open fast. DJ Big Stu and with the Block Club Video NYC.com, we definitely be in the building. So let's get into some music, man. It's a classic Monday. We just had a great interview. Once again, give a big shout out to my man, Mr. Rick Baker, you know, for kicking the book, No Goodbyes, the joint about the Mustay family, this mysterious disappearance about the Mustay family. Make sure y'all get that Amazon and all that type of stuff. But as of right now, party people. Tomorrow night, exclusive guest, Fredro Starr, formerly of Onyx, will be in the building. Make sure y'all tune in tomorrow night. Fredro Starr, formerly of Onyx, will be in the building. We will be discussing some of his film projects, the past, the present, some of the stuff that's coming in the future. You know what I'm saying? We're going to kick it over about the music. We're going to kick it over about a lot of stuff, man. It's going to be real fire up in here tomorrow. So make sure y'all be tuned in tomorrow for my man Fredro Starr will be in the building on Beef Stew Radio, y'all. That's what's up.
You broke my heart into half.
I would give her anything. Ongusa Nanga, Nelsa Makosa. yeye, amuna yeye, koma, sama kosa. Tanga tanga, umbusa tanga, ne sama kosa. Nika so.
Get up off of that thing and dance to you better. Get up off. Congas, Mr. Mongo Santa Maria.